Okay, so hi, I'm Daniel, and I'm going to present the results of our measurement study on domain-generating malware. Since this is basically the last slot of today, and I need to check if you are still awake, we play a little game, and just be ready to raise your hand, okay? Who thinks that this domain is automatically generated? Yeah. Okay, yeah, correct. So that's CryptoLocker, for instance. What about this one? Also generated? Yeah. Yeah, it's also generated. This is UL zone. And this one? Now you're curious. Yeah, okay, still some people, and this is basically just what I've been in for a long time. No, just a cat on my keyboard. And the thing is, you cannot really distinguish that stuff, and it really frustrated me 2 years ago, which is why I got into this research. So basically, this just as a short forward. Now, I'm first doing a short intro on domain generation algorithms, and next doing a summary of our findings. Then shortly going to talk about the data set that we have composed here that we are also going to share with the community, so you can, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, work on it. Going to present the taxonomy that we have derived based on that data, as well as looking into the registrations and collisions that you can find of domain generation algorithms and between those. Okay, so first about domain generation algorithms. It's a concept that's basically floating around since 2008 already. So it came basically up in the same time as Fastflux. So instead of quickly rotating IP addresses, it's basically quickly rotating domain names. And you can think of a domain generation algorithm as something that's basically dynamically generating command and control rendezvous points, so your malware knows which server to talk to. And it's somewhat like a shared secret between the malware running on the compromised system and the botmaster, who also has to be enabled to basically calculate those domains. Another term that I'll be using here probably a lot is a seed. And the seed is basically just the collection of parameters that is influencing the output of the said algorithm. And finally, AGD is just a short abbreviation for basically what DGA is spitting out, so algorithmically generated domains. Why would you want to use a DGA? So first off, it's aggravating analysis. So in the good old days, it would be enough to just run a malware sample, pull a memory dump of it, and basically just look for hard-coded IP addresses or domain names. If you have a DGA, you basically have to analyze code in order to understand what domains the malware might be talking to. So a lot of effort going into that. Evasion. Many of the DGAs are using very short-lived domains, so basically just a single day. And if you look at blacklisting, they are getting stale pretty quickly. So we have to rotate a lot of domains in a short amount of time, or basically the DGA domains are not caught up by blacklists at all. Backup. You, as a botmaster, only need to register those domains if you really need them. So for example, if you see that your current domain is being taken out, you just take the next one. There's a lot of asymmetry going on here. So an attacker only needs a single domain in order to control of his compromised systems, while the defender, if you want to do a takedown, has to seize control of all of the domains, or at least prohibit access to them. And finally, domains are pretty cheap, so this basically scales really well. Key findings. So first, what have we been doing in the study? We basically recovered 43 different DGA implementations by doing reverse engineering. And since it was asked in one of the reviews, on average, it took about 1 day to basically re-implement one of those DGAs. The worst example was basically that I got stuck for a whole week when I had to debug a flawed implementation of MesenTwister. And the easiest examples are probably just a couple of minutes to an hour if it's really a very cheap pseudo-random number generator spitting out randomly characters. By looking at a lot of malware samples, we were able to extract 253 different seeds using those DGAs and basically generated a data set of close to 160 million unique AGDs. Based on that data, we were able to derive some characteristics about them and define a taxonomy, and also to look for collisions between those different DGAs. Next, I got really lucky when I got in touch with domain tools, because they basically gave me access to their data, which enabled me to look up the history for up to 18 million of such domains from 38 families. I had to exclude some of them, which I will explain shortly. later. Anyhow, we basically were able to look at the registration status, so basically derive how many of those DGA domains are actually registered, and when were they registered, for example. And also, are they colliding with the domain space of benign domains? So basically, there's this one famous example of Configer from a couple years ago, where Configer would generate iTunes.is, and basically giving Apple a lot of influx of traffic. What did we find out here? So with those 43 different DJs we have been looking at, only three of them are using word lists. So basically, would be generating domains that look somewhat like natural domains, which is a good sign because it means that the detection methodology that has been defined in previous papers still holds true and works well on those. For example, as defined in this paper here by Antonio Karkis. Next, from our point of view, DJs massively increased in relevance over the last 2 or 3 years. So 25 out of those 43 DJs appeared only in 2013 and later. From a Botmaster perspective, probably correlating with that, DJs are pretty effective. We found that the AGDs, so the generated domains, are barely mitigated in time. So we were, based on the SUSE data, for example, we were looking at if control of a domain shifted from a non-sinkhole to a sinkhole. And in many of the cases where we observed those kinds of events, it basically happened after the AGD was no longer valid. So basically, there was a mitigation, but it didn't have any effect at all. And looking at takedowns, yeah, the only way that you probably would have here is buying a lot of domains. For example, this happened with Game Over peer-to-peer. And if you have to buy a couple of 10,000 of domains in order to just take down a botnet, it's getting pretty expensive. However, there's also good news. We found that DGA domains barely collide, so neither within a DGA nor with benign domains, which means on the one hand, DGA domains, if you pre-generate them, are a great feature to just based on the DNS output of a sandbox run, for example, can be used to identify the malware family as well as the campaign. And on the other hand, if you don't have any collisions with benign domains, you can directly use them for blocking without having to fear a lot of false positives. Okay, so for the data set, this is basically the core ID, which connects to the example that I gave in my foreword. By reverse engineering, the idea was basically to generate as many and archive as many of those domains as possible. So we ended up with this database with this core idea, so I don't have to guess what the domain might be. I would just ask my database, do you know that one? And it would tell me, okay, it's that family, and this domain is basically valid on this and that day. And the logical next step was, okay, if I'm able to predict which domains are valid on which days, I can derive block lists for all of the given days. Now, how to find DGAs that you want to reverse engineer? We used a only first, let's look at how you can classify domains. We use the remix of academic approaches here and some common sense we have to put in as well. First, the input that we were using here is lists of domains. So from Shadow Server, we were basically receiving the full sandbox output that they produce, basically telling us which malware sample is talking to which domains. And for the paper, we used 1.2 million sandbox runs here, which queried about 15.6 million domain names, out of them almost a million unique. In the first filter step, we would filter out some popular domains. Over time, we were curating our own blacklist in order to filter out common non-DGA malware, which basically used domains that looked like DGA but actually weren't because they were hard-coded. And finally, we could also filter already against the database of domains that we had there. In a second step, we would then look at the engram frequency of those domains, because if domains are random, you can expect combinations of characters that are not common in natural language, which proves really well here. This is also an idea of the paper that I just listed earlier, as well as entropy. And one of the findings we had in the course is basically DGA domains are not really short, so you can use that, as well as you will see many NX domain hits there as well, because botmasters do not, or basically all of the domains are not registered, so they're basically hitting into nothing. And finally, by matching the highest scoring domains against a couple of patterns, we can predict which family it might be, which helps us, because if we get a lot of matches on the same domains, we can probably infer it's a new seed, because it's not listed in our archive yet. And otherwise, if we have inconsistent matches, we can probably infer it's like a new DGA, and then we have to do the reverse engineering all over again. Since we didn't stop after writing the paper, we have now been looking at 8.8 million sandbox runs and 4.7 million unique domains in the course, which also helped us lifting the numbers of covered DGAs further. So for the paper, like I mentioned, we were looking at 43 different families with 253 seeds and 20 million domains. DG Archive now tracks 59 families with 511 seeds and 49 million domains. The web service is already used by more than 300 different parties, including ISPs that are using it to protect their customers, some financial institutions, CERTs, law enforcement, AVs, and researchers. So it's basically having some impact, which is basically the nicest thing that you can have when doing research. Okay, so looking at the taxonomy, one main feature, or two main features, when looking at DGAs are basically they can be time dependent or not. So meaning, if you run a malware sample, it will always throughout the same domains, regardless of the time it is being executed. Or it can be time dependent, meaning if you execute it today and tomorrow you will see a total different set of domains. So this is basically time dependence. And the second feature is determinism, in a sense that it doesn't matter where or when the malware sample is executed, it will produce the same domains. The basic example for that is if it's non-deterministic, it will, for example, fetch additional information from the internet. And in the past, there's been Torpic using Twitter trends, for example, and a newer example is BDEP, which has been using currency information on a weekly schedule. So this basically just means that you are not able to predict future domains beyond the certain threshold of information that is being fetched there. The last example, basically being non-time dependent and non-deterministic, I didn't observe anything for that one yet. One scenario that you basically can think of is you have a malware that scrapes information from the system that it's running on, sending that to the botmaster, and in that way basically sharing information that's not visible to the outside. Not seen so far. Something close to that has been used by one APT, but not the exact case. And secondly, looking, for example, at the generation schemes, the first one, arithmetic, is basically the standard one, what you would expect when looking at DGA domains, those randomly looking domain names. Second variation would be word lists. In this case, term except year, basically combinations of words that are being randomly picked from one or more lists of words. Third version being hashing, where directly a hash is being used as a domain name. And lastly, there's permutation, which only one family is using. Basically means that based on the start domain, you would do a permutation of the letters in there. Okay, now the interesting part, how are DGA domains used? Some things that we were interested in, for example, how many potential DGA domains are there? So how many could we basically generate to get the full set? And how many of these are actually registered? And basically the collisions, as I've already mentioned, and which I will be not addressing here, but which you will find in the paper as well as, are there recognizable patterns? How much upfront time-dependent domains are registered? For example, what you can observe there is, if you are a sinkhole operator, it doesn't matter to you when you are registering, but because even if you register before the domain becomes valid, you get some interesting information. Because if someone has set his PC clock wrongly and might be checking in earlier, this information is also of interest to you. While on the other hand, a botmaster basically has to ensure that his domain is up when the validity window is reached, meaning he cannot register very long into the future because the domain might be spotted by law enforcement or anyone who can mitigate it and basically take away his domain before it becomes valid. And secondly, we also looked at how effective these mitigations have been. Okay, as I mentioned, when you write a paper, you certainly have to fix the date, and we chose deliberately the 22nd of September last year, and included in our data set all the domains until the end of the year in order to ensure that we also see some of this advanced registrations in there, and then received this historic Whois data, and then first had a look what you can derive from Whois data. So based on that, we found some ways to at least recognize sinkholes. Since the Whois data we have there is historic, it means we can look at when you have a registration, and the registration is basically changed to a sinkhole or something that we recognize as a sinkhole before the standard registration time ends. So basically, forcefully, the control was handed over to a sinkhole, as well as pre-registrations, which means are there any domains that are registered before the family even appeared for some reason? Think of those wordless domains. It's very likely that they will produce some domains that are just attractive to someone, and he has registered them before the malware even appeared. And another story that you can find in the paper is we also looked at domain parking, and we found at least one case where it seemed to us that there was some domain parking operator trying out if they can use DGA domains to drive traffic towards advertisement, because for a short period of time, they were registering domains of several different DGAs, and yeah, basically, I think they just tried to pick up traffic there. Okay, so trying to visualize that kind of information, I came up with that. So that's all the different families that we have been looking at. I had to leave out three because 43 is not a good number to show in the grid. But there's not lots of information lost, and you can see the full data in the paper anyway. Let's first look at the number of generated domains per DGA family. The biggest ones, obviously, are Configer, because if you heard back then what happened there, there was a lot of fuss about it, as well as Virod. Configer generates, in one version, 50,000 domains per day. And that's happening since 2009. So that just simply adds up massively. And Virod is a similar case with 10,000 domains per day since 2011. There's a couple more that are generating at least multiple million domains, each of those also generating more than 1,000 domains per day. And after that, it's getting lower and lower. So it's basically the whole population of domains you have there. But yet, you can see many of those numbers are very high. And if you would try to eradicate such a botnet by just blocking all of the domains, it's quite a lot. And with just buying domains, it might be either expensive or a lot of effort. Registration numbers, which were pretty interesting. We had to exclude, like I mentioned earlier, those families. Three of them are basically using dynamic DNS, and we were not able to obtain the data for those third-level domains. And for Configer and Virod, basically, domain tools told me, no, that's just too much. Because both of them together are 140 million domains. If you look up the VeriSign reports, you can see there's only 300 million domains registered at all. So basically, those two are half, or those the potential domains of both of them are half of the actually existing domains. The DGA with the most registrations I found is Game Over Peer-to-Peer. So out of the 260,000 domains it has, 74,000 domains are actually registered, which is close to 30%. Some others with relatively or high relative registration numbers are those listed here. The most interesting case of those is probably Superbox, which I'll be addressing shortly. And from there on, you can see it's basically more and more going down. So altogether, we found only 115,000 out of those 80 million domains being registered, or in total, 0.6%. If you look at those registered domains that are connected to takedowns, you can see that even those again make up 70% out of all the domains we found there. So for example, the vast majority of those Game Over Peer-to-Peer domains are connected to the takedown of the botnet in 2014, as well as it's the case for Barmetal and CryptoLocker as well. Looking at the remainder of roughly 30,000 domains that are not connected to takedowns, we found 9.6 1,000 pre-registered domains. So like I mentioned, those that were registered before the botnet became active, which is quite a lot of collisions if you think about it. And mitigations are only 1,200, which is also way less than I expected before doing that kind of research. And 5,000 of those domains were directly registered as sinkholes. So the very first registration you find for the domain is directly a sinkhole. And that leaves us with around about 16,000 domains that are either protected by Whois privacy services or otherwise malicious, likely malicious. I wasn't able to ultimately find that out, but it's a good assumption, I think. Okay, let's look at collisions. Let's first have a look at collisions with Configer and Virut, because they have so many domains, and it might be more likely that they basically produce collisions. And in fact, Configer at least has 15 collisions not against Virut, while Virut has altogether more than 3,000 collisions there. But since those are the only DJAs that have collisions at all, and there's only 3,000 in 160 million domains, that's a pretty good result when you think of the uniqueness that a collision implies. So meaning, if you have a domain and it's basically contained in the database, it's very likely that it's also the family that you basically would assume it is when the database answers you. And if we exclude now Config and Virut, there remains only one collision in there. So this basically strengthens even this assumption, and this is this exact domain, which also simplifies my reaction to that. Okay, so if there are so few collisions in there, that means that if we pre-calculate this whole set of AGDs, it can be used very well to tag malware with regard to the family and campaigns. And this is what, after we got into cooperation with Shadow Servers, now happening in the backend as well. So they are using our database to basically pre-tag malware, as also some of the AVs started doing. And effectively, that also means that you will not have any false positives with domain links 7 and longer. With regard to pre-registrations, which is the more interesting fact if you look at if you want to use those domains as block lists, those three are the word list DGAs, and as expected, those will have the, or will at least have high numbers of such collisions against already existing benign domains. And ZippoBox is the hardest case here, because it's basically generating its domains by taking just two words and adding .NET. And one of those lists consists only of prenames. So many people that basically try to register names for themselves are colliding with ZippoBox there. Gozi, on the other hand, is doing a little trick to reduce this number of collisions. With a probability of 30%, it will cut off one of the random words it has chosen in half. So this basically ensures that if someone who tried to register several words in a row, it's way more unlikely, because you will have a broken word in there. Yeah, those families basically have domains that are 5 to 6 letters long. So this also implies why they might have more collisions. And ever thereafter, the number of collisions with pre-registrations is going down and down. And the majority of DJAs actually has no pre-registrations at all, meaning those will not be, or likely not be affected when just using their domain lists for blocking. Looking a bit deeper in that information, like I mentioned, the wordless DJAs make up 90% of those collisions. And in the remainder, those domains with length 5 to 6 make up another 90%. And occasionally, we'll have some domains that look like legitimate domains again. So those, just by pure incidence, are so pronounceable that they could be meaningful words as well. But anyway, this basically enables us to use those pre-generated domain names for blocking. Let's quickly go over this as well. Like I mentioned, if you have time-dependent DGAs, it basically means that you can look how long domains are registered before they become valid. So meaning they also have a window of validity. So for example, if you have a DGA that has domains that are valid for 1 day, I need to ensure I have control of the domain before this domain becomes valid. And after this validity has ended, it has no longer value to me. So we defined this registration lookahead, basically meaning the relative offset between start of validity and when the domain is registered. And we plotted this for both syncholds and non-syncholds and ended up with this box plot. So basically in the middle here is whenever you would register a domain on the day it becomes valid. On the left hand, you register it before it becomes valid. On the right side, you register it after it becomes valid, which makes sense in some cases because if you see those red bars behind the light and dark gray bars, that's basically the window in which domains are valid. The most obvious observations you could make here is syncholds are often registered earlier than non-syncholds because they want to get all the data they possibly can get. We found one very interesting case here because this box was far to the left. So as you can see, it's almost 800-900 days before the domains become valid. We assume that some botmasters for several probably non-related botnets try to register domains several years upfront. So basically, they probably wanted to register themselves backup domains. So whenever they were affected by a takedown, they would at least have this one domain sitting way behind because they also were basically registered for the same day just with a gap of 365 days. And another curious case was this one up there. 32 domains were registered exactly 1 month before they lost validity. And the only assumption that we could make about that is basically some syncholer failed in reversing and had an offset of 1 month in there. Okay, so with that, let me conclude. So DGAs are a pretty prevalent malware issue. If you read a lot on blog posts of analysis and so on, you will see that many of the different and newer malware families will probably have a DGA in there, which is supported by our data. A good sign is those low collisions that I've mentioned because it allows you to use pre-generated domain lists for blocking as well as using it to identify the malware families. With regard to takedowns, with botnet operators only registering shortly before the domains become valid, it's pretty easy to catch them off guard if you just register all of the domains, and it also means that you do not have to care about many domains that are registered far into the front. It's probably not many that you have to seize in that case. What we would rather prefer or propose is that you just go and rigorously block the AGDs because it will likely not have any impact on the benign users because you have so low collisions with the desirable domains that you can basically on a registry level probably just block them all out at least until the validity has ended. And for that, we are currently in contact with ICANN, VeriSign, and Nominum in order to check if we can basically put this into place on a larger scale. As I mentioned, we are providing this as a free service. So if you want to play around with the service or play around with the data, just write me an email or see me afterwards because I have some temporary access codes with me that I can hand out to you. What I always do because I want to keep the bad guys out is I need some basic proof of identity. Having met you in person is basically one way to do that, or some vetting by already existing users. And with that, let me thank you for your attention.
So in your when you classify the domains to their malware families, do you have any ground truth you use? For example, you reverse engineer the binary of malware so you know the domain generating algorithm so you can class exactly. So what kind of ground truth and how?
In the past 2 years, I looked at thousands of malware samples. So what I normally do is on the malware dumps that I have there, I would run Yara signatures for the specific families as well. because I think they are working better than, for example, AV labels and that kind of stuff. So that's, in that case, the ground truth that I'm using. So manual verification.
Wait, how do you do manual verification?
What do you mean by manual? I basically
given a domain, so how do you know this belongs to this particular male family or?
If I reverse the DGA, I can run them in a sandbox as well. So I can basically correlate against the sandbox list against the re-implementation list. And if I do this in an exhaustive way, so example, the 1,000 domains for 1 day, and I get the very same 1,000 domains before my re-implementation, I'm pretty sure that it works. I had some bugs in there, if you're pointing to that. But since I also get a lot of feedback from basically the community that we've built there, I'm pretty sure that we were able to eradicate most of the bugs.
More questions?
William LeCoultre, Applied Physics Laboratory. I think this is really interesting work in its own right. I'm also a little bit drawn to the RE aspect of it, because it seems like you've hit on a way that you could actually measure reverse engineering work factor just by the size of your data set and the simplicity of the algorithm. Well, what are your thoughts?
I think
metric, basically.
Yeah, the thing is, it's very specific to who is reversing. So I can only measure my own skill in that sense, or basically get what other people tell me that basically contribute those implementations. For now, I would say it's I've only observed one implementation of a DGA that basically where I said I have to instrument DGA instead of re-implementing it. So basically where the effort basically would have been higher to reverse it than basically going another route.
Mm-hmm.
That's one out of 60. Most really are very simple. So they use, as you can read in the paper, most of them basically just use LCG as a pseudo-random number generator and that kind of thing to spit out basically numbers that they would fit into the alphabet range.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Roberto Perdigi from University of Georgia. Great work. So I have a question, curiosity really, about PushDo.
Mm-hmm.
So there used to be a variant of PushDo that not only used to query the DGA domains every day, but also I think a set of 200 domains, popular domains, that they would be queried by the malware just to hide the DGA domains in the crowd. I was wondering if you think, you know, since you reversed it, is it really effective as a tactic? And did you see any other family using it?
I know that Veroot is doing something similar to that, but I don't think it's that effective because once you start reverse engineering, you pretty sure know how to filter out that kind of stuff. Otherwise, as I pointed out, with Alexa, you can filter out a lot of noise in that sense. What's more annoying is another technique used by some modern botnets, which is you would basically set the host field to a popular domain, but directly post to an IP address that you know. So this basically screws up proxies way more because you no longer can filter out the domain directly. But the other thing, I think, except for adding noise, it doesn't really have any hard effect.
Okay, thanks. Is there time for another question? So I was wondering if you have seen any case of sort of like a server-side DGA, whereby the malware will every day download from the CNC the domains, the list of random domains to be used the next day or something like that. So that you cannot reverse the DGA. The DGA is not with the malware. It's yep. On the server side.
There is some server-side DGA going on. For example, for a period of time, NIMEM was doing it. But they would do basically hard code a domain into a binary and update daily. So that's basically how they implemented their server-side DGA. There are some where the hard-coded lists look generated, but as I mentioned, are hard-coded and distributed in the binaries. And the other trend that you can observe is, or what I would see in the near future, is that they distribute the seeds dynamically. So the configuration file that you download from the CNC server contains an update to the seed, which, for example, was already seen implemented in CoreBot.
Thanks.
OK, any more questions? OK, that concludes this session.